Hello, everybody, and welcome to tonight's stream. I hope you looking forward to the bank holiday weekend. But before we get there, we've got some things to discuss. Most notably, the elections that took place in England yesterday. And we're live on Odyssey, we're live on DLive, we're live on Rumble, and we should be live on BitChute and Entropy as well. I don't know whether the BitChute stream is going to work this time. Trying to work out those bugs with Ray. He's a really good man. And I'm really looking forward to tonight's stream. I'm here. I'm ready. I've got my large tropical Red Bull. It's the fruity one. I'm feeling a little bit fruity myself today. I'm feeling in the good spirits, and I hope you are too. Now, I got talked out of this, you see. I got talked out of this because this is meant to be a sensible, down-to-earth stream. And I was speaking to Laura beforehand, and I was going to just title this stream the I Told You So stream with Mark Collins. It's too much, Mark. It's too much. So it's just called Election Results 2025. A little bit boring, a little bit maybe sort of mainstream, but the I Told You So stream sounded a little bit boastful, a bit boastful, probably taking it a little bit too far. Went for the more sensible title, some may say. Those in the know will get that joke straight away. although, ironically, there will be more people watching the stream than people who voted for the sensible party. But we'll get to that later. Let's not ruin the fun before we've done the intro. Anyway, live in all these wonderful places. And if you want to contribute to my great work, if you want to make sure that people are doing something other than pouring their time, money and effort into the pointless endeavour of electronics, which we'll be discussing tonight, please do make a small contribution to my work. You can only do that via Entropy, and the Entropy links are in the Odyssey chat, they're in the Rumble chat, they're in the description of the video. I'm here on my own tonight, but if somebody wants to pop them in the live chat, that would be appreciated. And then everyone can contribute if you like. $3, $5, $10, whatever you can afford. It's how I keep my head above water. You guys see what I earn every day. And if you think to yourself, well, this guy's not getting enough, you can chip in. You can chip in. And you can chip in the price of one of these fruity apples. They're £2. About $3. And they're really nice. They're really nice. I like the tropical. So I like the regular, but the tropical is good. You can also donate by a cryptocurrency. If you're one of those crypto billionaires and you want to give me a little bit of a leg up in life, you can do that via crypto. All the crypto links are in the description below. And finally, you can write to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. And if you are somebody who is disagrees with what I say or wants to give me some feedback, you can absolutely do that by writing to me. And I answer all my emails. Unless you send me some sort of like 10-page rambling missive, then it might take me a little while to get back and work through it. But if it's a sensibly written email, then I'll get back to that next working day. Sometimes working day, if I really value what you're saying, I've got a bit of free time on my hands. So can't say error, really. Can I? Some people are saying the audio is breaking up. I don't know why that is. Do you want me to try and fix the audio? Somebody said echo. There should be no echo. Have I spilled Red Bull on my mic? Is it still doing it? It's a bit scuffed. Well, I obviously can't hear myself. I can try to reconnect. Give me 2 seconds. Right, can you hear me now? Is that all good? Is that fixed the problem? Is the problem fixed? Is the problem fixed? That's my high high energy intro ruined with technical problems. But I'm not angry. I'm in a good mood today, and I'm not going to get angry about the little things. I'm just going to take another sip of my Red Bull and remind you that for the mere price of $3, you can buy me one of these giant cans of Red Bull, and I will love you forever. Anyway, now we've done all that, now we've done the intro, you know how you can contribute, please do. You know how you can get in touch, please do. Please do. And yeah, ask your questions tonight. There are going to be questions and answers at the end. I will answer every single paid question, and then if there's good questions in the chat, I might do some non-paid questions depending on the time, because I'm that kind of guy. I don't like to put up paywalls. I don't like to charge people things, but if you're generous enough to give something, I will definitely answer your question, and I will try to answer non-paid questions too. So can't say fairer than that, can I? Anyway, let's get into things. And remember, this is the election stream. It's totally not the I told you so stream, which I'm not allowed to call it. So yesterday was elections day. It was the big elections day, elections all over England. So it was the English elections, and three big things happened yesterday. There were the county council elections, and there were some council by-elections. There were six mayoral elections, which are a lot more important than you actually think, but we'll get back to that in a second. And there was also the crowning jewel, the parliamentary by-election in Runcorn and Helsby. And that was the one which all eyes were on that. All eyes were on that, because that was going to be the real measure of how things have swung since July. And this is interesting. Well, this election is interesting for a number of reasons, not least that it is the first test that Labour have had since they came to power on the 4th of July last year. Now, it's not often do you get a major round of elections within a year of a party coming to power. And often, if you do, you end up in a situation where that party breezes through because it's in what's known as the honeymoon. But things are a bit different here. Things are a bit different. And the first thing to note is these were just English elections. So this was the smallest round of elections since 1975. Now, but just because they're small doesn't mean they're not significant. As I said, there was a parliamentary by-election, six mayoral elections, and the county councils. Now, not all the county councils were up, because Labour knew, both Labour and the Tories knew how bad things were going to be. So where they could, they chose to delay them until next year. So this would have been a bigger round of elections, but because we live in this perfect, totally fair and wonderful democracy, the powers that be can just delay an election when they want and give themselves another year in power. Absolutely scandalous. Something that you would expect to see maybe in some banana republic, but no, that's what happens in Britain. I think both Labour and the Tories were dreading these elections. So some of them were delayed, and it led to these elections being a bit smaller. But really, you would say these elections were the perfect elections for nationalists to perform well and to punch above their weight. There were several things that led to this. The first, these elections would have a small turnout. As it's a small round of elections, there wasn't that much publicity. It was less than 12 months general election, so that lowers the turnout. Secondly, there was widespread anger in the country over a number of things. Widespread anger over nationalist issues. Widespread anger over immigration, over border crossings, which isn't immigration, it's illegal immigration, so both legal and illegal. Anger that people weren't being deported, anger over two-tier policing, anger over all kinds of anti-white woke policy. So again, perfect for nationalists. You've got small turnout. Nationalists always do well when there's a smaller turnout, because nationalist voters tend to be ones who always turn out, always go out and protest. So they get lost at a general election with 60% turnout. But when there's sort of 20 to 30% turnout, their vote counts a lot more, because there's less people voting. So small turnout's good, widespread anger's good. But also, something happened which I touched on earlier. There was a major dislike of both of the two parties. Republicans, two major parties, Conservatives and Labour, as you know, but both are hated. And this is odd. Now, it's normal for the Conservatives, being the outgoing party at the last general election, to still be disliked, to still be hated, because of all the terrible things they did over 14 years, the people were very annoyed with them. So that's normal. What is abnormal is for an incoming party with such a large majority of Labour got at the last general election to be instantly so disliked. Usually there's a honeymoon period. Like if you look back at the Blair era in 97, Blair had quite a long honeymoon. He brought in sort of cool Britannia before you know where you were. Noel Gallagher was, you know, drinking champagne with him in Downing Street. Everything was good. And Labour seemed to be able to do no wrong as far as the public could see. And there was a honeymoon period. Now, Starmer has been in for less than 12 months and things are already belly up. You know, he's already annoyed everyone. He's already very unpopular. Lots of people in his cabinet, people like Richard Reeves, very, very unpopular already. So, strangely, there is a dislike of both major parties very close to one party going out and another party coming in with a huge majority. That, I've never seen that before, but that's what you have. So it's perfect for nationalists. So going into these elections, people wanted to see two things, because there's two things you can really achieve at elections, and both are shows of strength. Now, the first thing you do is before election day. And that is, you make sure you stand as many candidates as you possibly can. Because by standing lots and lots of candidates, it makes you look really good. It makes you look powerful. It makes you look well organized. It makes you look like you're a well-oiled political machine. And it's a statement of intent. It's a statement that you've got your ducks in a row and you're actually going to challenge the mainstream. And boy, did Reform knock it out of the park with that one. Now, obviously, on election day and thereafter, all that really matters is the number of wins. So before, it's about the number of points you stand. Then after election day, it's about your number of wins. And again, I don't think this is a big spoiler. I don't think anyone's ignored the news today, so you can get it from me. But if you have, well, here's the lowdown. Reform knocked it out of the park before and after election day. You know, this will be remembered as their election. Now, before election day, due to these councils delaying the elections in their areas, there was only a total of 1,641 councils up for grabs across 23 authorities. Now, Reform stood a stunning 1,631 candidates, which made up for 99.4% of the available seats. Now, that is incredible. That is incredible. And I listed Reform first because Reform stood in more seats than any other party. And when I say any other party, I'm not just talking about minor parties. I mean any other party. The Conservatives fielded 1,596 candidates, which was 97.3%, and Labour stood 1,543 candidates, which was 94%. Further behind were the Liberal Democrats with 1,396 and the Greens with 1,183. So that made Reform look really strong. And I've got to say this, it said something else about Reform. Now, look, I work for 10 years in a political party, in the publicity department, and for a large period of time as the head of publicity, designing the election leaflets and working at the cutting edge when it came to elections. I've got to say this, to stand that many candidates is a Herculean task. And for Reform to do that, it shouldn't be laughed at, it shouldn't be sniffed at. They have got their ducks in a row. And whatever people think of Nigel Farage, I'm not his biggest fan when it comes to policy. But you've got to give credit where credit is due. Nigel Farage has put together a team that can outshine the two historic parliamentary parties. That is unprecedented. That is unprecedented. And you've got to take your hat off to these guys. They have got the organisation, the manpower and the money. to pull something off that's truly impressive. And this would put them up there with parties on the continent, like the National Rally, like Marine Le Pen's party, which has produced numerous similar feats. And Farage is now really in a league of his own. And as I said, that's not to say I like him, and you can take this out of context, but credit where credit's due. Now, let's get on to the more unfortunate news. Let's have a look at how the smaller nationalistic patriotic parties did, and we can see what they were doing before election. And we'll do a rundown. The Heritage Party, that's David Curtin's party. I wouldn't say they're ethno-nationalist, but they're definitely nationalistic. They're more on the patriotic wing of things. There are 25 candidates. UKIP, we all know who they are. They stood 17 candidates. The Homeland Party, they stood 5, but comically, they booted one out or separated with one, which is really funny, isn't it? The Homeland Party, who were the party which were constantly riding Nigel Farage, saying, "Why are you standing down candidates?" Well, they literally stood down at 20% of their total candidates and got rid of Steve Laws before Election Day, who was, you know, quite clearly their most famous candidate. Bizarre. The British, they ended up standing 4, with Steve basically standing under the name, but effectively being an independent. If he'd won the seat, he'd have sat as independent. The British Democrats stood 3. The Patriot Party, which is run by an ex-PMP member, they stood 2. The English Democrats stood 1. The National Front stood 1. The National Housing Party stood 1. Britain First didn't stand any. The BNP, absolutely terrible. They didn't stand any. They were once the biggest nationalist party to exist electorally, not by membership, but electorally. The National Front was bigger by membership, but the BNP was bigger in terms of the number of candidates stood and their election gains. And finally, the National Rebirth Party, they stood 0. But I suppose we should give them a get-out-of-jail card, because their small leader keeps telling everyone he's going to be the next prime minister without even standing in election. So I'm still looking forward to seeing that feat materialise into reality. Only joking, that's never going to happen. Now, I'm going to say this. These parties stood very, very small numbers of seats. Very, very small numbers of seats. But there tends to be, and I'm going to give credit here, and this isn't going to be me dragging these people through the mud, etc., etc. I'm going to give them credit where credit's due. There are two tactics. The first tactic is, before Election Day, you have a big show of strength. You stand as many as you can. The BNP used to do this. BNP would stand sort of 600, 700, 800 seats at council. Wow, the BNP standing 800 seats, that's incredible. You know, where did they find all the candidates? This was a show of strength. It was a show of strength. But sometimes you don't go down that route. Sometimes you stand 4 or 5 candidates, and that's not a show of strength, but you're doing that to concentrate all of your resources in those seats and win those seats. So I'm not saying that the only way forward is to stand hundreds or thousands of candidates. There are different ways to go about this. So it's not necessarily a bad thing to stand fewer candidates. The numbers there aren't impressive in terms of totals, but like I said, there are two objectives with elections. First, pre-election day, how many can you stand? And secondly, post-election day, what were your results? Now, I'll give you a good example of this. As I said, the BNP would stand maybe 600 to 800 council seats. And as the BNP stood those seats, it would try to win as many as it could. Now, back at the BNP's height, there was another party called the England First Party, run by a guy called Mark Cottrell. You might know Mark Cottrell. He's the editor of Heritage and Destiny, a very good magazine. You should all subscribe to it. He's a really nice guy. Met him on a number of occasions. Really like him. Mark started the England First Party. He was going out of the BM. They stood 2 seats in BMP and 600 seats. England First, they're standing 2. England First for 2 seats, and they won. It's impressive. They looked at what they had to do. They concentrated all their activists in those two seats, and they won. And that is exactly where a small party wants to be. People said audio's gone again, but I literally have not touched anything. I don't know what's going on with this. It's getting worse. Right. Is it getting better now? Do you know what I think it is? I think I know what it is. Is it getting better now? Tell me, no, it's not getting better. Well, I don't know what it is, as I say. I'm really sorry about this because, as I say, it's people are saying, have I got a game loaded? I don't have any game loaded. There's nothing else that I'm going. The only thing I was doing is using a VPN to stream it to BitChute. It might be that I'm using the VPN. And if the issue is the VPN, then so be it. So if it's improved, then good. So sorry about the audio issues. So as I was saying, England first, stood to 1-2. So if you're going down that route of standing a small number of seats and then you're winning all of them, then good. Because obviously, obviously, it's one of those situations where you want to come away with some wins. Now, obviously, this I just do not know what is actually happening. It's going bad again. Well, I'm just going to have to battle through because I don't have any connection problems. I can see here that my connection is absolutely golden. I don't have any problems with the mic. I can see my mixing desk and I haven't touched the mic or moved the mic. So I basically killed the VPN. So we're not connecting through that anymore. So I don't know. I'd have to listen back to it, but my apologies. Anyway, so you've got your two seats and they won both of them. So these are two different strategies. Now, I think it's important to say that these parties all scored very, very few seats. And even if they'd won one, overall, it would be meaningless. And I want to state that. I'm not being a defeatist, but winning one council seat really doesn't make that much of a difference. In the grand scheme of things, to actually be effective, you need to win parliamentary seats, directly elected mayor, or enough council seats to control the council. The fact is, at the moment, I can adjust the game. Is that slightly better? As I say, I don't know what it is. I'm just gonna have one last go to just go into my audio settings. And yeah, it says that it's the default mic. It says it, you know, echo cancellation's on. I don't know what it is. So my apologies. But that's really annoying because obviously I put a lot of time and effort into getting these streams going and getting them up and running. And for it not to be working really irritates me. But a couple of people have said that StreamYard has been having problems with audio over the last few days. So I don't know. But anyway, as I was saying, even if you won a single council seat, you wouldn't really make a difference unless you were in a weird situation where there was 20 Tory councillors, 20 Labour councillors, and you get the deciding vote on the issue, which is very, very odd. You don't often get that situation. I can't imagine that coming about very often. And even if you did have one nationalist candidate, the two parties would probably conspire to make sure you never decided on anything. So, you know, when it comes down to it, I think people make a lot bigger deal of these council elections because you don't actually get any power. Anyway, that's pre-election day. So let's move to post-election day. And we'll start by having a look at the biggest of the wins. We'll talk about the Runcorn and Helsby by-election. And the only two nationalist parties stood in that, other than Reform English Democrats, they did very poorly, and a group called the English Constitutional Movement. Now, I don't really agree with those parties standing in that election. I think they should have just left it to Reform. Reform only won by 6 seats. But if one of those parties had stopped Reform winning, I would have been disappointed, because I'd rather have a Reform MP than have a Labour MP. Boom, there, I've said it. But Runcorn and Helsby wasn't just any by-election win. Runcorn and Helsby was a by-election win in the 49th safest Labour seat in the country. That's significant. This wasn't a marginal. This wasn't a seat full of floating voters. This is the kind of seat that a cabinet minister would be gifted to ensure that they kept their seat. What's more, it was a Labour seat. And that's really interesting, because I've heard a lot of nationalists come out with nonsense like, Reform only take Tory seats, only Tories vote Reform, Labour never vote Reform. Look, you know, if a Reform candidate stands, what will happen is the Tories will switch, but Labour will get in. We need a genuine nationalist option that can give national socialist policies. Without that, Labour voters will never come up. Absolute crap. People telling you that, talking rubbish. I said this last year. I said it loud and clear. This is probably the first I told you so. I said, Reform will pull votes from Labour and Tory alike. Nowhere is safe from Nigel Farage. Nowhere is safe from Nigel Farage. And you've seen this also in County Durham. I know I'm jumping ahead, but in County Durham, it was a Labour area for 100 years. It's now a Reform area today. They went to bed, with 100 years of Labour rule. They woke up and Reform are in charge. This is very, very significant. Reform a bridging gap between traditional voting camps. They are drawing from Labour, they are drawing from the Tories, who have never voted, people who have always voted for outsider nationalist parties. They are pulling support from all over the political spectrum, and they are bridging that centuries-old divide between red and blue. And this tells you something. They will be a serious threat at the next general election. They can take the 49th safest Labour seat in the country in a by-election when the entire Labour machinery will be there on the ground campaigning for their candidate. They can do it anywhere. Okay, they might not do it in Starmer's seat, might not do it in Badenoch or Jenrick's seat, if there was the Tory equivalent, but they can do it almost anywhere. And this means that Farage is a serious threat to the next general election. So another thing that people said, that I said was rubbish, was, oh, Farage will be done before the general election. You know, it's a flash in the pan. He's had his moment. He had his moment, you know, at the last general election. No. That was just the beginning for him. His party now has about 226,000 members. That's probably shot up overnight. He's going to be a serious threat. People say, oh, well, he only won by 6 votes. It's still massive. It doesn't matter whether you cross the finish line a mile ahead of your opponent, 5 millimetres ahead of the opponent. If you cross the finish line first, you cross the finish line first, in the first past the post system, you get the gold medal, you take the seat, they're back up to 5 MPs. Reform have the momentum. Do not underestimate this. I should have really done it in the other way around. I should have done the council elections first and worked up to this, because it's sort of a jewel in their crown. Then you get to the mayoral elections. Now, sadly, Reform didn't do quite as well as I thought they would in the mayorals. They won two. They won one in Lincolnshire. They won one in Hull and East Yorkshire. They also thought they'd have won the Doncaster mayoral election, because Doncaster used to have an English Democrat mayor, and they have a history of voting outside of the establishment. So I thought that was going to be a Reform shoo-in. The Reform candidate lost by about 500 votes, but winning two of the six mayoralties is massive. And it's massive for a reason other than what you might think. It's massive because large amounts of people vote for you. It's done across a whole town or city. But it's massive for another reason. And that reason is you're granted real power. Now, early on, I said, you don't get real power unless you have a majority at a council. Having one local councillor doesn't give you any power. That's not to be sort of a Debbie Downer or cold water on people's efforts. Just the truth. Just the fact. I've seen BNP councillors, local councillors, get nowhere and just be bogged down for 4 years and get voted out because they never get anything done. Being a mayor is totally different. You have serious legislative spending power. You also get to bring in your own team. You also get to do things like fund St. George's Day. So these councils, they'll fund Gay Pride, but they'll never fund a St. George's Day. I hope in Hull and the East Ridings and in Lincolnshire, those reform mayors give us a St. George's Day. Because that's the sort of thing they have the power to do. This is a prestigious position. These were positions that Labour set up because they believed if they set these positions up, they would have such power over the electorate. Because people keep voting for them. It's just another layer of power where they controlled more of people's lives. You know, they had more control. But no, when these posts fall into the hands of a reform candidate, or as they have in the past with the English Democrats, that means real change locally. So I would say that Hull and the East Riding and the Lincolnshire area that have got these mayors, they will now see massive boosts in reform. Reform will go through the roof in those areas, and they have real power to spend money, get things done, make a difference for people, put on big patriotic shows like St. George's Day. Put on proper Christmas fairs. No more winter villain crap like that. This is the kind of thing that makes a difference. So again, absolutely massive, but I thought we're going to take half of these. This is one thing which I was slightly wrong about. They didn't do quite as well as I hoped, but still, taking two out of the six available with the other four going to Labour, still massive. Still a huge step forward. You can't downplay what they've done. Now, finally, you get on to these county council elections. And this has been epic. Seeing what they've managed to do overnight is just brilliant. Now, these are still being counted. I'm actually bringing up the BBC site on my desktop now because the results are still coming in. As it stands, nobody can beat Reform. Reform have smashed. They've won 632 seats and they are 632 games. Sadly, the Lib Dems are in second with 364. They have got gains of 150. The Conservatives have held strong in third place, sickeningly enough, and they have 297 seats with a staggering loss of 630. Labour are in fourth, narrowly by one seat with 88 seats, a staggering loss for them of 180. Independents are at 87 with a loss of 20, and the Greens are at 76 with a gain of 43. Now, usually, when both the Tories and Labour are unpopular, you see a big boost in the Lib Dems. You've seen that. You also see a boost in the Greens, which you've seen. But with Reform now, Reform have benefited from this in both Labour and Tory areas, as I said earlier. They have proved themselves that they can stand in both areas and do wonderfully well. And I said this a while back, Nigel Farage is the only outsider politician to ever win national election. He's done it twice. He did it once in 2014 for UKIP. At the European elections, he did it a second time, a different party, the Brexit Party, which then renamed itself to the Reform Party, 2019 European elections. And this is the third time he's done it. So for an outsider, non-mainstream politician to win one national election would be massive. Farage has now done it three times. He has won three national elections, two European elections, and a round of English County Council election. This is unprecedented. You might hate him, you might like him, you might like some things about him, you might dislike other things about him. What you can't say about him is he's a failure. He's not. He is smashing it and he's building on those gains that he made at the last general election. They got five MPs elected. Now, the analysis for the other major parties is interesting. Lib Dems did well. They gained 158. nowhere near as well as they were hoping to do. The Conservatives, though, are the big losers. The hatred for them is unreal, and they've lost 630 seats up until the point, they're still counting them tonight. And they might have lost more by the morning. Labour have lost 180, which is incredible. And the independents haven't gained. So the big winners here really are Reform and the Lib Dems. The Greens have won, but it's not significant. You know, they've got 76 seats. But the Conservatives have been smashed. Labour have been smashed. We truly are living in a time where both of the main parties are popular at a level we've never seen before, and at the same time, like I said, usually one of the parties is unpopular, like the outgoing John Major establishment that left the Conservatives in the doldrums between 97 and 2010. You know, the outgoing Brown establishment left Labour in the doldrums between 2010 and 2024. So there are these cycles, but for both parties to be hammered like this at the same time, as I said, it's absolutely unprecedented. As I said, the Greens and Lib Dems would have historically all that slack. And that's what happened as Labour became unpopular in the noughties. As Labour's honeymoon waned, as Britannia faded from people's memories, that was when the Lib Dems took councils like Leeds City Councils. Historically, Lib Dems did really well, and Lib Dems have done well. I'm not saying they've done badly, but what they aren't doing is smashing it like Reform did. And you're going to look at these results, two mayoralties, the by-election win, and the national win in the county council elections, and you're going to say, this is a major step forward for Nigel Farage in his bid to be in Downing Street. This is going to be a surge until at least the next general election. Reform are going to be surging until at least the next general election. And bear that in mind, because we're going to come back to that. But most interesting, what did Farage fight this election on? And this is the most interesting thing. He fought it on the most hard-line policies that any party that's ever done this well has ever fought an election on. He fought it on deportations. He wants a minister for deportations. He wants to be a cabinet minister to deal with mass deportation. He wants to be known, he said this in an interview, as a deporter-in-chief. He wants a grooming inquiry. These things of things that the BNP would have called for. And Farage is shifting further and further to the right again. I'll explain why a little later. All these things are good things. All of these things tell you that there is a shift in the mood of the public, which is moving the Overton window so far to the right that it is policies that the BNP wouldn't have gone all out on in their heyday. So back in the day, the BNP, Nick Griffin never said, I want to be the deporter in chief. People are like, cool that bit, Nick, you're going a bit far there, mate. You know, we played those things down. Farage is playing those things up. So in many ways, this is a good time to be alive. Our talking points are not only being picked up by major parties, but they are winning major national elections. So this is good. And it's good for another reason. Reform are smashing the old two-party system to pieces. They're destroying old party loyalties. They're destroying the odious Conservative Party. I mean, Kemi Badenoch is presiding over disaster. And they're destroying these old parties and smashing the system with the most hardline policies that any party that has been this successful has ever espoused. Now, saying all that, are you ready for the next I told you so? Well, a while back, I did a video called Farage versus Lowe. And in it, I said that I thought Rupert Lowe was a real standard guy. I said I really liked the fact he was going in harder than Farage. But I said that this would not affect Nigel Farage. I said the Rupert Lowe split would not affect Nigel Farage. It would not affect reform. It wouldn't alter the course of this election. I made that very, very clear. I said absolutely that this would be something that was confined to the likes of X. It would be confined to online chitter chatter, but it wouldn't make a difference in the way that the elections went. And I said that Nigel has got a history of these fallouts. He fell out with other people. He fell out with Kilroy Silk. He fell out with other leaders of then UKIP. He had all these big tiffs, but he always comes out on top and none of it slows him down. And my prediction was that the Rupert Lowe thing would come and go. It'd be a little bit of online drama. And I said, what happens on X isn't necessarily real life. You can get 100 people to go and ratio somebody's account and have all the top comments and like each other's comments and share memes under people's comments. And it makes it look like everyone's saying your thing. And for a while that was happening to Nigel Farage. People were memeing Rupert Lowe. This is a reality check for people. And yeah, I called that. As I said, I've not called everything right tonight. I was slightly wrong about the mayoral thing. But the big, broad brushstrokes, I've been right about each time. Now, let's get on to the juicy bit. Because this is what a lot of you have been waiting for. This is the gossip. This is the drama. This is my take on the smaller parties. And you're all waiting for this because you know which party I'm going to talk about. So I'm going to take another sip of Red Bull. I'm going to make sure I'm fully powered up. Make sure you're fully powered up as well. And remember, if you want to donate, you can donate via Entropy. You can send me $3, the price of a can of Red Bull. Right. Here's the issue. Here is the issue with the small parties. Now, I said earlier that there was an issue of standing as many candidates as you could. And I also said there was an issue of standing a small number of candidates, but doing very well. So I said, you can be forgiven for standing fewer candidates if the candidates you do stand get absolutely superb results. If they're getting the 20%, the 30%, coming second, if they're knocking it out of the park. If you're winning seats, if you stand five and you win five, boom, you've done it. That's a good strategy. It's the military strategy of guerrilla warfare. You concentrate your forces in the area the enemy is weakest and you punch through that line. And what am I going to say to you now? Did any of those nationalist parties or other smaller parties I listed earlier that stood in the elections, did any of them punch through the line? No, they didn't. And if you've been watching my Telegram or my Gab today, you'll have seen me speaking about this. These are the worst results any ethno-nationalist parties have ever got, ever, 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 ever. The whole time I've been involved in nationalism, so since the turn of the millennium, 2000 to 2025, 25 years, I have never seen results that are this appalling. And what did I say a while back? I did a stream about elections and I said, is the electoral route a dead end? And I actually laid out everything that I'm saying here tonight. I laid out how all this would happen. And I said that now was not the time for nationalist parties. That nationalist parties would go up against reform. They'd say exactly the same thing as reform. But they'd be tiny, inconsequential. They'd be swept to one side. They'd be completely humiliated. They'd lose all their money. They'd humiliate their candidates. And it would be the biggest embarrassment going. And exactly what has happened. Well, everything I've just said has just happened. It's just played out over the last 24 hours. And there is one party that I'm going to single out in all this, and it's going to be the Homeland Party. Because obviously, they've said a lot of things about me, and they've cast a lot of aspersions, that I was wrong, that I was blackpilling people, that I was somehow working against the good of nationalism by predicting these things and saying these things. I have been proven 100% correct, and they have been proven incorrect. But worse, the people running that party knew what I was saying was right. They don't need me to sit here tonight and say, I told you so, because they already knew what I was saying was right. What they are running is essentially a scam. Now, back in the day, when the BNP stood in council elections, it was seen as a bit of a bungle if a candidate got less than 5%. Usually candidates got above 10%. And it was one time when the BNP averaged, I think it was about 17 to 18% averaged across the country. Now, the Homeland Party's results were absolutely appalling. I'm going to read them to you because, I mean, really, you need to hear it to understand just how bad they truly are. Their best result was 2.56%. Their next best result was 2.54, 1.21, 1.06, and their worst result was 1.04%. Not one of their candidates got as many votes as we have watching this stream tonight. In fact, if you take all their votes together, all of those candidates together didn't get as many votes as we've got people watching across multiple platforms tonight. And I'm not blaming those candidates, by the way. I'm blaming the leadership. The leadership have built a bubble on X. Now, I talked a little bit earlier about the bubble that was built about Rupert Lowe and Farage, he's done, he's over, it's gone. Exactly the same has been built on X around that party. Sharing silly memes of planes with the logo on, taking off as, you know, people wave from below and remigration is coming. The fat slob who runs the party, he did this big address to the public at the end of last year's Christmas message. 2025, it's going to be the year of remigration. We're going to be sending them back. They're not sending anyone back. It's a lie. It's a scam. They have built a bubble on social media, which has artificially boosted their standing. And that bubble burst on election day. It burst yesterday. And you're seeing the results of that. But it's actually worse than everything I've just said. Because we're building up here, guys. We're building up. You don't start. You don't start. But you build up. You build up. That party is a scam. And I'm going to explain why. And I'll explain why the leaders have scammed the members. What was that party doing last Saturday? They were holding a conference on remigration. That is sickening. It's disgusting. And the morbidly obese slob should rescind his position as chairman immediately for that decision. Any serious electoral party would never, ever in a million years hold a conference and demand all their activists go and sit in a room the weekend before election day. Now, I'm going to take you back to the heyday of the British National Party. Nick Griffin, me and him don't get on, but credit where it's due. If somebody had said to him the weekend before election day, let's have a big conference and get all our activists together in a room to eat little triangle sandwiches, cheesy Wotsits, have a few pints and listen to speeches, he would have kicked that person out immediately. He would have given no truck to them to get out. Probably treated them as they were wrong, because he would have said every single person in the party needs to be on the street in the last weekend before the election. The last weekend before the election is critical. Everyone would be there. And Nick Griffin, to his credit, back in the day, was an impressive man. He would actually be everywhere. And I remember seeing him everywhere. he would come to the Northwest. He'd be in Oldham. He'd be in Burnley. He'd be in Blackburn. He'd do a whistle stop tour. He'd have pictures taken, put out some leaflets, knock on a door. Then he'd be in Leeds. Then he'd be in Bradford. Then he'd be in Dewsbury. Then he'd be in Huddersfield. Then he'd fly down the country to the East Midlands. He'd be in East Goscote. He'd be in Charnwood. Then he'd be over to the West Midlands. This would take place over a weekend. He would go everywhere. He'd constantly be driving, meet people for an hour, put out a few leaflets, go to the next place. That's what he was like. And that's how a real party operates. A real party doesn't sit in a room eating triangle sandwiches and listening to homosexual catboys and Zionists the weekend before an election. That's just not what you do. That's not what you do. And the fact that these people who are meant to be seasoned nationalists, the fact the slob who's meant to have spent all this time in nationalism and totally knows what he's doing, got everyone in that room rather than out electioneering, tells you that he's more interested in feathering his own nest and hearing the sound of his own voice than he is actually about winning elections. Because if he was serious about winning elections, he'd have said, look, we'll do the conference a couple of weekends after the election, but we need everyone out on the streets. We need people helping Steve Laws. We need people helping the candidates. You know, we've got a woman down there in Norfolk County Council. Let's get 10 bodies on the streets knocking doors and make sure she doesn't get 26 votes. She got 26 votes. 1%. She barely made 1%. The fact of the matter is, and this is damn important, if you're going to be a party, at least put the damn effort in. But all that party has done is paid for someone's kebabs and acted as a humiliation ritual for its candidates. That's what this election has been, a humiliation ritual. But interestingly, none of their leadership stood. None of their leadership stood. The only one with any balls who was in a leadership position was Steve Laws. What about Ant Burrows? He lives in Derbyshire. Why didn't he stand? Why didn't all these people that are basically part of the party's leadership that live in the Derbyshire area stand in the Derbyshire County Council? Because they didn't want the humiliation themselves, but they were happy for people in their party to be humiliated on their behalf. And that is despicable. That is frankly despicable. So it's all right for their candidates to be laughed at, but not for the leadership. Now, there's also the issue of this conference. It wasn't just that they held a conference. They held a Zionist conference with a Zionist homosexual who says, I'm not a nationalist. He says, he's a Zionist homosexual. He admits it. But they wanted him there. His whole speech was about how multiculturalism wasn't really a creation of a certain small-hatted tribe. And in fact, the small-hatted tribe are the ones that come off worse in multicultural societies and need protecting from the anti-Semites. I mean, it's sickening. It's sickening. They sold out. They sold their souls. But what did they sell their souls for? 26 votes? 1%? And what have I said to you guys again and again and again and again? We will never sell out. We will never sell you out. We will never shaft you. We will never give up our policies. We will never stop fighting for a white Britain. We will never give up on the ethnic people of these islands. We will never kowtow to the Zionists. We are a group that stands for a homogenous England, a homogenous Scotland, a homogenous Wales. We stand for the indigenous people of these islands. Now, I know what the argument is. Come on, guys. If you sell out on X, if you sell out on Y, if you sell out on Z, we'll get some great election results. It's all going to be brilliant. You know, can you imagine it? Homeland Party, 20% here, 30% there, two councillors elected there. What? The worst results we've ever seen, and they sold out. They sold out. And the irony is they ended up going up against Farage, who not only dominated the elections, but ironically stood on a more hardline platform than they did. It's insane. It's insane. That's the final comedy of all of this. They moved so far to the left to grab votes that they ended up being leapfrogged by Nigel Farage. Selling out doesn't get you a win. All it does is sell out. That's all you get. Selling your soul doesn't get you what you want. It just means you're a pawn of the devil. It's a Faustian pact. And for those who don't know what a Faustian pact is, I'll let you Google it. It's a Faustian pact. It's something where you think you're getting a deal, but really, you always come off worse. And I saw this in the BNP. The BNP sold out for a little bit more, for a little bit more, for a little bit more. And eventually, when the results didn't come in one year, when everything went bad, we'd sold out so far that all the hardliners had gone. And when the results weren't there, all the soft new people left. And there was no hardliners left. And there was no one in the party. It collapsed. This is the way that parties destroy themselves. And seeing people like Steve Laws, who is a good guy, and other good people, being especially young, energetic, good people, who have been conned into that organisation to get humiliating results and to sit in a conference feathering some fat guy's nest as candidates basically are sent out there to the slaughter. It's heartbreaking. And I feel sorry for those people. And I'll tell you what, if the people at the head of that party had any shred of dignity, they'd all be resigning and admitting that I'm right. But they're not going to do that. They're not going to do that, are they? No. What we're going to see next is what I'm going to call the era of copium. It's going to be the era of lengthy Twitter posts about how 1% was actually a great victory, how 2% will rock the establishment, how their name's out there now. It's only a matter of time before the public come rushing to them. Don't buy into the copium. Buy in to reality. I said all this would happen. It's played out, and it's actually been far worse than I predicted. I actually thought there'd be the odd candidate that may get 3%, 4%, maybe 5%. I actually gave them more credit than they deserved. This is a disaster, and this should be an absolute wake-up call for everybody in the nationalist community. We're living in interesting times, folks. The Labour Party, the Tory Party, they are the most unpopular they've ever been. There's been a mega shift to the right. There's been such a shift to the right that you've got people like Kemi Badenoch and Robert Jenrick talking about deportations, talking about two-tier policing. And they're coming so far right that they're shifting Farage even further right. It's incredible. But unfortunately, because of this shift to the right, I've said it again and again, and I've described reform as the 600-pound gorilla in the room. It leaves no room for nationalism at elections. You get squeezed out, or worse still, you actually end up to the left of Farage. You end up being completely eclipsed in this political no man's land with a humiliating 1%. You waste money, you waste time, you waste effort. And my conclusion for this is the elections, on one hand, were a good thing. They show us that the traditional two-party Tory-Labour political dichotomy is finally crumbling. Great. We want the Tories smashed. We want Labour unpopular and hated, and we want Starmer to be the kind of prime minister that everywhere he goes, he gets booed out. That's a good thing. And reform, they're not perfect, but they're delivering that. They're crushing, smashing, dismantling that two-party system. Wonderful. We need that. The second thing, there is this shift to the right. The Overton window isn't just being pulled along by millimetres. It's not being pulled along by inches. It's like when you're pulling something and pulling something, all of a sudden it shifts by about 2 feet all at the same time. Like, what? This is our time to engage with the public, not electorally, but through other democratic means, through advocacy and through activism. Speak to the public, educate them, talk to them about things that electoral parties can't talk to them about, and wake them up to big issues. More and more people are talking about intellectual far-right ideas because of the way the Overton window is shifting. The fact we have a Reform Party that is standing for deportations and standing on a harder platform than the BNP did is a good thing. And that means there is going to be hundreds of thousands of people on their fringe who are open to our more radical ideas. That is good as well. That is another win. So what do we do? Well, we stop this stupid electoral charge. We stop this humiliation ritual. We stop conning ourselves. We stop conning young nationalists, telling them, you're going to be a cabinet minister in 5 years. You know, and they stood there in their green suit, shirt and tie, you know, giving their speech as if they're getting ready to accept a position from the Führer himself, from the fat Führer, and then they get 26 votes. No, stop this. We need to channel our money, our time and effort into alternatives, into community building, advocacy and activism. And underpinning all that, there needs to be a serious effort to do things like the Woodlander Trust, where we are putting our money not into the dead-end, bottomless pit of elections, but into serious attempts to acquire land, buildings and resources where we can centre communities and where we can actually have safe places for us to meet, for us to camp, for our families to gather. We have so many opportunities now. The opportunities open to us now are greater than ever. You can walk down the street and talk about deportations and people will listen. You couldn't do that back in the day. You couldn't do that back in the BNP days. You can do it now. But what you can't do is pretend you're slightly more moderate than Farage and get a good result. You can't do that. That's going to be a waste of your time and money. So guys, in summation, to wrap it up before I do the super chats, it was a good day. Things are moving in our direction. But if we're going to survive as a movement, we have to adapt. We have to evolve. And we have to realise that the ground on which we fight is different and it's changing. And if we do things the way the National Front did in the 70s and the BNP did in the noughties and expect it to work in 2025, we're going to be disappointed. If you don't move with the times, if you don't evolve, if you don't notice the way the battlefield has changed, the landscape has changed, you're going to be wiped out. When the Second World War started, the French were seen as the ones to watch. They had this network of tunnels and underground bases called the Maginot Line. It was meant to be impenetrable. And it would have been if things hadn't changed. The Germans, however, had developed mechanized combat known as Blitzkrieg. They just drove round it, came at them from the back, and the French surrendered in record time. If you don't look at the way the landscape and the entire political scene is changing and developing, you will be left behind, or worse still, you'll be killed off. And we, as a movement, need to adapt, evolve, look at the opportunities and grasp them. And I'm proud to say there are groups out there, Patriotic Alternative, the Woodlander Initiative, and lots of other groups, active clubs who are training young men, etc., getting people together, building communities. There are homeschooling groups. All of these things are good things. There are protest groups. There are local initiatives taking place all over the country to stop asylum seekers being housed in hotels. All of those things can have an effect and make a real difference in people's lives. This is a time in which there are unprecedented opportunities. Just make sure we, as a movement, evolve and adapt to take advantage of them. And we will be much better off and we will build a base for the long run. What we don't need is to repeat the follies of the past in an environment, or in an electoral environment, that is harsher than it's ever been due to the presence of reform. And that wraps up my thoughts on it. I hope you've enjoyed this stream. I am going now to answer the super chats. If you haven't super chatted yet, but you want to, you can, and I will happily accept any super chats. Remember, $3, $5, $10, whatever you can afford. And remember, this can of Red Bull costs $3, and it is mighty tasty. And potentially as tropical and fruity as this stream has been. Masaya gave $3. Well, thank you so much, my friend. Chris gave $10. Thank you very much. And he said, hello, Mark. Been a while since reaching out to you. Congratulations on your newborn son. Wish you all the best and thank you for all your work and being top-notch advocate for the British people and all white people. Well, thank you so much, my friend. It's very much appreciated. Al Katie, please don't hit me, gave $30. Thank you so much and said, now trannies are hitting me too. Please, somebody help me. That's obviously a joke in relation to Alec Yerbury's National Rebirth Party, which was chased out of Birmingham by, what do you call a large group of trannies? A gaggle of troons, we'll call them, a gaggle of troons. Blade Man gave $3, thank you so much, and said, Frank Callodine of the British Democrats is the UK's most successful nationalist candidate in recent times. He got 4% of the vote in the general election, did reasonably well in the Doncaster mayoral race this year. Yeah, look, I've got to say this. I'm not taking anything away from these people, right? And I understand they worked hard. But when you're saying the best result we've got was 4%. The most successful nationalist in the country got 4%. I see a disconnect there. I see a problem. Do you see what I mean? It's an issue, isn't it? You know, when we're saying that to be the most successful, you need to breach the 4% barrier. I mean, not a single Homeland candidate got votes out of double digits, got over 100 votes. It's terrible. It was made up, gave $15. Thank you so much. So thanks, Mark. Looking forward to your analysis on this. Well, I hope you enjoyed it, my friend. Solar Mass gave $12.90. Thank you so much. Said $12.90 was a good year for England. Thank you so much. British Gamma gave $25. Thank you so much. He said, what do you think the Tories' next step will be? And do you think the public, who have short memories, will believe their lies come the next election like they always seem to? Well, this is interesting. And thank you for that question. And thank you for the super chat. I think the Tories are in a really, really interesting position now. Because Jenrick is talking about two-tier policing. Badenoch is talking about deportations, talking about migration control, and talking about a proper inquiry into the grooming scandal. And you've also got people like Suella Braverman rightfully pointing out that there is no way to be English unless you have English blood, unless you're ethnically English, that English is an ethnicity. And this is really interesting because you've actually got the Tories being forced to talk about ethnocentric, ethno-nationalist talking points, as well as, again, talking about deportations, migration control, and using the term two-tier policing, which the Home Office branded an example of far-right extremism. So I think the Tories are going to shift further to the right, but I don't think it's going to have the effect they think it's going to have. I think what it's going to do is it's going to legitimise Nigel Farage's talking points. It's going to make him assess his position. He will say, well, if they're coming further right, I need to differentiate myself by going slightly further right myself. And I think what it will do is it will perpetuate a move on the right away from the centre ground, which again can only be a good thing. You're going to end up with a more radical Reform Party, because the Conservative Party are having to be a more radical Conservative Party. But I don't think it's going to help them like it would have done, because it's too soon. It usually takes a major political party a decade to recover or to start recovering in earnest from a big loss. So 1997, okay, let's have a look at this. So 1979... the Tories get in. They last until 1997, 18 years. Labour then comes in. and people forget what Labour have put them through previously and give Labour a clean bill of health, a second chance. Then Labour rule from 1997 to 2010, and it takes the public 13 years for them to forget all the things that the Tories did under Thatcher and Major. At which point David Cameron comes in, and the Tories are in from 2010 to 2014, a 14-year stretch. So you've got an 18-year stretch, a 13-year stretch, and a 14-year stretch. And it takes 14 years for the public to forgive Labour for what Blair and Brown did. And you tend to have a minimum of a decade for the public to forget what one of the main parties have done. It's too soon for the public to forgive the Boris wave. It's too soon for the public to forgive what has gone on with mass immigration and betrayals over Brexit and border control. It will take them about a decade to fully rebound and to start genuinely pressing the Labour Party. And in that time, reform is going to take a lot of ex-Tories, a lot of ex-Labour members, and it will cement itself. The next general election will be a battleground, will be a three-way fight between the Tories desperately trying to claw something back, Labour desperately trying to hold on to what they have, and Reform coming out swinging and taking battlegrounds which were previously seen as safe seats. It's going to be an interesting period. And building off the back of this momentum, the next round of council elections will be very interesting. And I'm going to say one last thing, which is slightly an addition to your question. And it's going to be that really it's Reform's to lose. You know, it's like when you're running at the goal and the keeper's miles away from the line, it's caught him off guard, and you've just got to slot the ball in to an open net. It's yours, but it's also yours to blow. It's yours to fluff. You know, you're the only one who can fluff it. And I think that's what we're going to see here. I think we're going to see Farage running with the ball. And as long as he doesn't, you know, commit to some howler where he hoofs the ball miles over the crossbar and into the crowd, it's going to be pretty much like scoring an open goal for him, because both parties are going to become more and more hated. You're going to have the Labour Party being more and more hated, and as more comes out, which it will do, because the Tories have only been out of power for a year, and there's a good year or so where more and more sort of drips out about bad things they did, the bad things that sort of come into fruition, you know, and people are still looking back at all these migrants in hotels blaming them. So neither of those parties are going to be in a position to actually go on the offensive. So this is really, it's in Farage's hands. It's in Farage's hands. He's got the chance to do this, and it's like shooting us an open goal. Pig Beanus gave, I always have to get that the right way around. Pig Beanus gave $3. He says, thank you. Well, thank you to you, Pig Beanus. The Thin Red Line gave $5. Thank you so much. Said, good breakdown. Well, I'm pleased you enjoyed it. Rhodesian Ridgeback gave $3. Thank you so much. Mark, my energy bill is still insanely high. Double pre-Ukrainian invasion early 2022, and I exclusively used candles and no heating all winter. Any tips? This is breaking people. Tips for heating? Well, it depends whether you've got a family. Because if you've got a family, you need the heating on. However, if you're a single guy, I tend to be one of those sort of people that, like, you know, just puts my hoodie over my head and pulls a duvet over my legs. I've always been that way because I hate paying, you know, massive gas and electric bills. I mean, the best tip for getting warm is have a really hot 5-minute shower, put on a pair of jogging bottoms, a hoodie with the hood over your head, put the duvet over your legs, and you should be snuggly. Your body heat will generate and you'll be nice and insulated. But at this time of year, it's been bloody boiling. I'm sweating like a pig tonight. This room is extremely hot, so I shouldn't think you'll have to worry about energy bills until winter. Poit gave $10 and said donation. Thank you so much. Nick Griffin's cape gave $3. Thank you so much. He said, strange how the guy who is known for pointing the finger at others, calling them schlackers, doesn't actually do much himself. Shame there were a lot of good lads who went to Homeland. Hope they see the light. Well, look, you know, I hope those young lads do see the light. And I hope so many young lads who are part of Homeland stop doxing themselves and getting involved in silly stunts, you know, for publicity, when it's clearly not bearing any of the fruit that they thought it was going to. There isn't going to be a hardline nationalist electoral revolution. And, you know, we know that Farage is going to be the only game in town up until 2029 and maybe beyond. So, you know, bear that in mind, guys. Saturn 5 gave $6 and said, hi, Mark. Well, hello to you. And thank you so much. Lars Agerback, gave $5. Thank you so much. Said, congratulations on a new baby boy. That's great news. It certainly is. And he's nicely chubbed up since he's been on the boob constantly since being born. Rich 17 gave $5. Thank you so much. And he said, Justin Barrett is now my favorite Irishman by some distance. Well, I've never spoke to Justin. I don't think he likes dealing with British people because of the Irish thing. So there you have it. Britalian Alex gave $5. Thank you so much. And I totally agree with you on the futility of electoral politics for nationalists in present day UK. I say this as somebody who stood in a parliamentary by-election and once believed in the electoral route. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that. And I appreciate the fact that you're here tonight and the $5. So thank you so much, my friend. And that takes us to the end of the paid super chats. So I'm going to see if there's any Odyssey super chats or if anyone wants to throw anything else in. I'll answer the Odyssey super chats briefly. Stan One said, you called it last year, Mark, reformer dominating the area of politics otherwise known as the kosher right. Well, thank you so much. Albion Forever gave Odyssey super tokens. Thanks so much. He said, I think the kebab eater could do with reforming his diet. Yes, very good. VM gave $3. Thank you so much. A great stream. Notice there's some lefty articles listing awful quotes from reform candidates. Easily the best free advertising you can get. Indeed. Thank you so much. Rhodesia Ridback gave another $3. Thank you so much. Said, Mark, what's not to stop the leftist parties, Lab Lib, SNP, Green, Plaid Cymru, from doing what the left did in France and make election-only coalitions to keep reform out? Well, there isn't anything to stop them doing that. However, I think they'd find it. I think they could do that with the BNP, but I think doing that with a group like Reform would cause a lot of people to really get rather angry. And I think the mainstream would. I think British politics is slightly different. I know they did that locally in a couple of areas to stop the BNP, but I'm not sure that would happen with Reform. And I think if they tried that with Reform, I think it would actually increase Reform's popularity. And Labour and the Tories, like I said, it's Reform's to lose. So if Labour and the Tories start doing really dodgy games like that, I think they would actually drive more people towards Nigel Farage. It would be playing into his hands. Because one thing that Farage, even though Farage now has the second biggest party in Britain, one thing that he kind of like trades off is that he's the outsider fighting for the little guy. So that actually builds the mystique around him, which is what he wants. The Woodlander gave 5 Odyssey tokens and said, great stream. Well, thank you so much. And somebody said, Jay Warren, not Jay Warren, was it Jay Warren? No, John Fraser, sorry, said just... Somebody said... Oh, no, here, Henry said, reformer probably another false dawn. Look, I want to make this really clear before I go, just so nobody misinterprets. I'm not saying that the Reform Party are a solution in themselves. What I'm saying is they are the party that can help move the Overton window and smash the two-party system that's held people sort of in its grasp post-Second World War. And it's been this iron grasp of Tory and Labour, and that's finally being broken. I see Reform as a necessary step ideologically and politically for change further down the line. And the kind of politics they're pushing helps to assist a growing sense of ethnic awareness amongst the indigenous people of these islands, white Britons. I can't say anything better than that. Do I think they're the end game? Do I think they're the people that would save us all ultimately? Well, sadly, no, I don't. You need something far more radical than that. But this could be a step towards that. VM gave another $3. Thank you so much. Said, do you think reform can keep hold of these seats? All are well and good standing the seats, but all these elected councils have the support and know-how in earning the respect of their constituencies. I think they can. Look, if you're a lone candidate and you get elected, it's very hard to learn the ropes. Some of these councils have completely shifted to reform, and I don't believe there's any council where there is just a lone candidate, which means there will be groups working together and the council will have to help them because they are running the council. So it's very different from being just like Adrian Marsden, the lone councillor on Halifax Council, or Robin Evans, the lone councillor on Blackburn Council, or Chris Beverley in Leeds. You're not going to be that lone, isolated councillor. You're going to have a team working with you. And in many cases, you're going to be in charge of the council, setting the budget, putting on the St. George's Day. They have that power. And I think that's going to stand them in good stead. Anyway, I think I've answered all the questions. We've done an hour and 20 minutes. I hope you've enjoyed it. I hope everyone agrees with what I've said. Remember, if you don't, you can always write to me. I sometimes say things or you say things people disagree with. If you want to write to me and get clarity, that's great. If you want to donate after the stream, you can do. You can use the Entropy link 24/7. So if you like these streams and you're watching on replay and you usually contribute on replay but can't anymore, you can do via Entropy. It's the pinned comment in every chat. And you can donate via cryptocurrency as well. Anyway, that's me going to call it a night. I might do a stream on Sunday. Nationalist A team is waylaid, most likely, because Natty's had his own baby boy. Congratulations, Natty. And obviously, they're a bit sort of snowed under with two little ones in the house. Anyway, it's been absolutely fantastic tonight. I've really enjoyed it. Great viewing numbers for a Friday night stream, especially one that's so electorally centered and not one about ideology. So I'm going to be doing one now, but one final announcement. I've got the Louis Theroux Settlers documentary and I'll be reviewing it next Sunday. So look forward to that too. Anyway, on that bombshell, I hope you really enjoyed it. I'll see you all again soon. Look after yourself. Have a great bank holiday weekend. I might see you Sunday. I might not, but I'll definitely be back next week for Patriotic Review. Thank you, everybody. Good night and have a lovely weekend. Love you all and see you again soon.